Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Morning. Welcome to our show on Jewish history and destiny. Always is wonderful to be with you. Our show has now moved to Friday mornings, which is a wonderful time, a great time, and always a great honor to share ideas with you live on a Friday morning. So we're going to look at the interesting dates that we're going through at this time according to the Hebrew calendar. We'll look at a couple of days that are very important to remember, a very big part of Jewish history. But I think we're going to save that section for the end of the show. I want to start out with two very powerful ideas from the parsha we read tomorrow, Parsha's Beshalach. Beshalach is the great, powerful climax of the Jewish people leaving Mitzrayim, and they come to the sea, and Hashem opens the sea for them. They walk through, and they turn around. The Egyptians chase them. The sea crashes down on the Egyptians, destroying their evil tormentors forever, and they break out in this magnificent and spontaneous song. But before we get to discuss the powerful song that they sang, there's a very interesting observation at the beginning of the parsha. We see that the Jewish people have left Mitzrayim. Plague number 10, Makas Bechoros, has taken place. The firstborns of Egypt are killed, and the Jews leave in the night of the 15th of Nisan. And then Paro receives intelligence that they have reached the shore of the Yam Suf, of the Sea of Reeds, and he says, wow, the Jews are now trapped. And the Torah tells us at the beginning of the parsha, V'am Paro Livnei Israel. And Paro says to the Jewish people, Livnei Israel. Rashi says, how could he be speaking to the Jewish people? The Jewish people have left. There are no Jews left in Egypt. The Jews either died in the plague of darkness or left with Moshe in the middle of the night on the 15th of Nisan after the plague of the death of the firstborn. So how could it be that Paro speaks to the Jewish people and says, they're now trapped and we're going to get them? So Rashi says, Livnei Israel v'hiya means he speaks about the Jewish people, not to them, but about them. And the conjunction of Lamed can be about. So what Rashi says does make sense. However, the Targum Yonasan bin Uziel says that Paro was speaking to Dasan and Aviram. Dasan and Aviram were two individuals who were actually the nemesis of Moshe. We see their emerging Parsha Shmois, and they remain to be a thorn in Moshe's side all the way up until their demise in Parshas Korach. And so, according to the Targum, that's who Paro was speaking to. Now, how can it be that they were still alive? We know, again, that the Jews either died in the plague of darkness or they left. There weren't any Jews remaining. Says the Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin, who was one of the great rabbis of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael at the turn of the century. Rav Diskin says an amazing thing. He says that Dasan and Aviram, they were individuals who were still alive and didn't leave with the Jews. Why were they able to still be alive? Because it says all the Jews that didn't have faith and believe in Hashem died in the plague of darkness. Why did they not die in the plague of darkness? 80% of the Jews died in the plague of darkness. And says Rav Diskin that we know, we have Midrashim that teach us that the Egyptians were very evil taskmasters. They were slave drivers. And they, the couples who were Jews who were forced by the Nazis to ensure the slave labor of the Jews during the Holocaust, during the slave camps and the concentration camps, they were not a Nazi invention. They were invented by the Egyptians. The Egyptians had Jewish taskmasters over Jews, and they demanded of the Jews, of the taskmasters, to ensure that the Jews under their watch would produce the quotas and work in the slave labor. And says the Midrash, Dasan and Aviram, they refused to beat the Jews. They refused to beat the taskmasters that were under them. In other words, they were in charge of a certain number of Jews who were in charge of a large number of Jews. And they never, the Egyptians told them they haven't produced their quotas, you must beat them. And they refused to beat their fellow Jews. And as a result, they were beaten. They were whipped because they wouldn't beat their fellow Jews. So we see that they had this tremendous schus, this tremendous merit, that they refused to physically harm their fellow Jews. And as and they were even prepared to take a beating themselves rather than harming their fellow Jews. Says Rabbi Yehoshua Lev Diskin, that a Jew who feels the pain and suffering of another Jew and who will not, and is even prepared to take suffering upon themselves rather than cause further suffering to their fellow Jews, that individual has a tremendous chus, has a tremendous merit. And that's why even though Das and Aviram were evil people, were Roshayim, they didn't have faith in Hashem, but still because they had Avas Yisrael and because they were sensitive to the pain and suffering of the fellow Jews, they were saved. That saved their lives. And therefore, they didn't die in the plague of darkness. And that's how Paro could go to them and say, well, we're going to now go after these Jews and get your people. And so it's a very important lesson for us, isn't it? That we are to feel the suffering and pain of our fellow Jews. And we empathize deeply with all of the Jewish people. There's an amazing story that Rabbi Franz tells that Rav Shmuel Auerbach said at the funeral, the hesped of his father, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was one of the great rabbis of the 20th century, a great genius and a very kind person, renowned for his tremendous compassion and empathy. And his son, I learned in a yeshiva called Midrash Shmuel, which is in Shari Chesed, and right next to our yeshiva was a yeshiva called Malos HaTorah, which was the yeshiva of Rav Shmuel Auerbach. So I would see Rav Shmuel almost every day walking to and from the yeshiva. He was a tremendous, also has passed away, a tremendous tzaddik, Talmud Chacham. And he said at the funeral of his father, he said the following. He said that his father was always careful, was always makpid, was always very conscious of the suffering of fellow Jews. And his father would often tell the story about the Baruch Tam. The Baruch Tam was a Jew who lived in Europe. He was a famous author, a Mechaber of Sforim, and his son was engaged. They lived in a small shtetl, and his son was engaged to the wealthiest family in that town, in that shtetl. And they had an engagement party. In those days, it was called the Tanaim. They had the gathering that night, and the family and the friends got together and celebrated this wonderful news that the Baruch Tam's son was now engaged to the daughter of this family. But the Baruch Tam wasn't extremely happy over there. He had a bit of a sour look on his face. He was a bit upset. And the mother of the kala, of this young lady who just got engaged, went over to him and said, "Is everything okay? It looks like you are not so happy. Why are you not celebrating this beautiful simcha?" And he said, "I've just received news that the water carrier of our town," now in those days they didn't have running water, so somebody had the job of having to go to the well and to bring water for the people. That was known as the water carrier. And the Baruch Tam said, "We've just received news that he is very ill with a very bad prognosis. And this man has a wife and he has children, and I'm really upset for him and his family." And she said to him, "Get a grip. This is your son's engagement. So somebody's sick. So there's sick people all the time. You need to be present and celebrate at this occasion." And he went white, the Baruch Tam, and he got up and he said to his son, "The shidduch is off. This is not going to happen. I cannot allow my son to marry into family that doesn't feel the suffering and the pain, doesn't have empathy for the Jewish people, for our fellow Jews. So such a marriage will not work." And so we see it's a very important lesson for all of us that, As Prime Minister Netanyahu said at the funeral of Ron Gvili, he quoted our dear friend Rama Peres, who said to the Gvili family that this is a day of great joy and a day of great sadness, a day of sadness that you're burying your son, but a day of kavod to give him a Jewish burial. And Prime Minister Netanyahu said, as Rabbi Peres has been saying a lot lately, that the Jewish people are a small nation, but we're one big family. And that is true. We are all to feel the suffering, the pain, the hardship of our fellow Jews. And we carry it together because we all are one big family. We'll be back in a moment.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic offers you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacy's Better Health Starts Here. So we're discussing the incredible moment when the Jewish people, as described in this week's Parsha, are standing at the seashore. They've walked through, the sea is split miraculously for them. And the Midrash tells us it's actually split in 12 places. So the 12 tribes each went through. And as they went through, it was just incredible, miraculous, phenomenal what they saw. The sea bed dried up so they wouldn't be stuck in the mud like we see the floods in the low veld, in which many of the sand roads are still not traversable because there's so much mud. So that didn't happen to the Jewish people when they walked through. Hashem dried it for them, and they saw the sea on either side, and it was like a, like in the aquarium, you see the animals under the sea. That's what it was like for them, and they saw the incredible sea life and all the fish and the underwater activity. And they walked through and came out at the other side, and they turned around, and the Egyptians followed them, and the sea closed and crashed on the Egyptians to destroy them forever. And the Jewish people sang a magnificent song, the song of the sea, starting with the words, Az Yashir, Moshe Uvene Yisrael, Es Ashira Azois. And then sang Moshe and the Jewish people this song, this beautiful song, Ashir La Hashem Ki Goga, the eternal song of praise of Hashem, which was spontaneous and in unison, the people sang together. And the first line of the Torah of that song says, Az Yashir Moshe Uvene Yisrael. It didn't say that the people sang, but rather it says, they will sing. Why is that? So Rashi quotes the famous Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Tzav Tzadi Aleph Amabay says, Techiyas Hamesim Mina Torah Minayim. From where do we know that there's this concept of Techiyas Hamesim, of the revival of the dead? And the Gemara says, from this pasuk, from this verse, from the first line of the song that the Jewish people sang, Az Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael, they will then sing in the future. So why here? Why did Moshe choose to teach the Jewish people this important principle that there's something called Techiyas Hamesim at this point? What is Techiyas Hamesim? Techiyas Hamesim is a big part of the Jewish tradition, part of our belief system, of our of one of the tenets of Judaism, is that there's going to be a resurrection of the dead. So that means the souls that have left this world, they will be reunited with the bodies that they lived in. So the body is buried, and the body is in the ground. The soul goes to the world of souls, the Oidam HaNeshamos. But when Mashiach comes, and when the world will reach its complete and perfect state, so there will be a time of resurrection of the dead. That's a big question. What if a person had multiple Gilgulim? Judaism believes in reincarnation, that most of our souls have been here before, and we have a chance to do the job again. Obviously, we didn't do it the first time or the second time or however many times. And we're given, Hashem is kind and gives us an opportunity to do the spiritual work we're supposed to in these short years we have in this world. And if we don't succeed in achieving our spiritual perfection and the growth that our soul has the potential to achieve, so then we sent back and we have another go, another try. And in fact, it's not good for our soul. Yeah, the intention is that we get the job done first or second time or whatever it is, but it's a painful for the soul to keep coming back to try and have another go. So the question is, if we've had multiple incarnations, which body are we reincarnated into? Are we resurrected into? And there are many answers in the Kabbalistic forum. Some say it's the lost a body, whatever it is. But so we'll find out when that time comes, hopefully soon. So this concept of Techiyas Hamesim is a big part of understanding how the world works, of where we're going to, of what the ultimate perfection of the world is. The question is, why did Moshe choose to teach this principle here when the Jewish people had just come through the incredible plagues, the miracles at the sea. Why now? That's the kasha of the Belzer Rebbe, of Aaron of Belz, or of Aaron of Belz. The Belzer Rebbe miraculously survived the Holocaust. When the Nazis, just before they invaded Poland, he was able to get out of Poland, for Belz is a town in Poland where he was, and he was smuggled into Hungary. He was in Budapest. He remained in Budapest for the early years of the war, but towards, in 1944, early 44, that's when the Nazis invaded Hungary as well. And he got word that that was happening, and he was miraculously smuggled out of Hungary into Turkey, and he got into Eretz Yisrael. And the first Shabbos he spent in Eretz Yisrael, who was actually in Haifa, was the Shabbos of B'Shalach, exactly 82 years ago. So this week, 82 years ago, he arrived in Haifa, and his first Shabbos was Parshas B'Shalach. And he had a group of people around the table with him, the Belzer Rebbe. And he asked this question: why is it now that Moshe chooses to teach the principle, the idea of Techiyas HaMesim, of resurrection of the dead? And he said it's because the Jewish people had suffered so severely in Mitzrayim and had been through such unbelievable trauma that nobody who was at the sea who had survived was free of losing a loved one. People, many Jews died under the terrible suffering, bondage of slavery, of the slave labor in Egypt. Many Jewish children were murdered in infanticide, that the Paro said, if Jews don't meet their quota and haven't made enough bricks, you must take Jewish children and put them in the walls. So the people had been through an unspeakable trauma. And although they had seen the incredible miracles of the plagues and the miracles at the sea, they were broken people. They were shattered, and they needed chizuk. They needed to be lifted and inspired. And Moshe knew that. And so Moshe, therefore, decided that this was an important time to share with them this message of Techiyas HaMesim, that I know you've lost so many loved ones, but don't worry, don't fear. You will be reunited with them again, and there's going to be Techiyas HaMesim. And you will sing a beautiful song with your loved ones when the resurrection of the dead takes place. It may take many generations, but everybody will be reunited. And that lifted the people. And that was very appropriate at that time because they needed it. Said the Belzer Rebbe, and we too, we Sheris HaPleta, the remnant of the Jewish people that have survived this unspeakable trauma of the Holocaust, of the murder of our people, of the ethnic cleansing and genocide of the Jewish people by the Nazis, and so few survived, and how could they carry on their lives so shattered and broken and devastated and traumatized by what has happened and by what they've seen in front of their eyes? Says the Belzer Rebbe, we too need to lift ourselves, just like the Jewish people at the sea were told by Moshe that there's going to be a Techiyas HaMesim, and they will be reunited with their loved ones. We need to know too that we will see our loved ones again, and there will be a resurrection of the dead, and we must move forward and lift ourselves and rebuild our lives and continue our mission and our purpose as the Jewish people. What an incredible message. What a powerful observation and teaching of the Belzer Rebbe. And I think it's relevant to us too, that although, thank God, we haven't been through traumas of like the Jewish people in Egypt or traumas of the Holocaust, but we've all suffered disappointment, we've all suffered loss, we've all been through trauma in our lives. And so we should remember the message of Moshe, and we should understand that it's all part of the process, that Hashem has a purpose and has a function for the world, and nothing is in a vacuum, and everything's part of Hashem's grand plan. And ultimately, we will reach the purpose, the goal, the fulfillment of the perfection of this world. That's where Hashem is leading us and taking us. And we will be reunited with our loved ones that we've lost, and we will see the purpose of everything that we've been through, both on a personal level as individuals and on a national level as a people. It will all fit in. It will all make sense. it will all be, we will see the purpose and the genius of Hashem's plan. And so we shouldn't be despondent, and we shouldn't be downtrodden, and we shouldn't wallow in our depression. Even though we've been through hard times and suffering, we need to lift ourselves, and we need to build our lives, and we need to move forward in a positive and optimistic way, because that is the understanding and the mindset of a Jew. And the greatest song of all that any Jew will sing will be the song of the resurrection of our own lives. When we've experienced loss, we've experienced a part of us that has died because of the trauma we've been through, whatever trauma it may be. And it may have been a very, very severe trauma. But the greatest song we will sing is when we resurrect our own lives and we pull ourselves up and we rebuild ourselves and rebuild our lives and build our families and build our souls, and we fulfill our mission as God's holy people, bringing the light of God into the world. And so that is a eternal lesson for all of us, and something that should lift us all and give us optimism and positivity and inspiration as we carry on and build our lives. So let's now look at the dates that we've been through. I'm going to take you through a week of dates that we've just passed and some very significant milestones and historical dates that we should remember. The first one I want to mention is that on Wednesday, so today is Friday the 12th of Shvat, in the Hebrew year 5786 since the creation of the world, the 30th of January 2026. So let's go back to Wednesday. Wednesday was the 9th of Shvat. Wednesday was the Yotzeit of Rabbi Eliezer Silver. Rabbi Eliezer Silver died in the year 1968. Rabbi Silver served as the rabbi of Cincinnati for four decades. He was born in Lithuania and came to America in 1907 at the age of 25. He held several rabbinical positions around the country before settling in Cincinnati, America's second largest Jewish community at the time. He was also the head of Agudas Yisrael and Agudas HaRabbonim from 1923 until his passing, which gave him the title of Chief Rabbi of North America. He also was one of the founders of Agudas Yisrael in America. In 1939, Rabbi Silver received a telegram from his mentor, Rabbi Chaim Orizer Grudzinski, notifying him of the severe situation in Europe for the Jews. He immediately formed the Vaad Hatzalah to aid Jews in Europe, for which he raised millions of dollars. At one point during the years, the Cincinnati community had paid off his mortgage as part of his compensation package. He turned around and remortgaged his house, giving the money to the cause. Rabbi Silver is credited for saving upward of 20,000 lives. Isn't that unbelievable? Absolutely incredible. So he was involved directly in saving 20,000 Jewish lives. It's just breathtaking. During the war, many Jewish parents gave their children to Catholic orphanages so that they should be spared. After the war, the church was reluctant to identify the Jewish children in their homes, as they saw it as the divine will that the children should be raised as Catholics. Rabbi Silver developed a strategy to identify the Jewish children. He walked into the dormitory of the orphanage, would stand on a chair and scream out, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, the anthem of the Jewish people. The orphanage would inevitably fill with children crying for their mothers. Rabbi Silver would then tell the priests, these children are ours. These are Jewish children. These are mine. And as a result of that, there were many clashes in the different orphanages and monasteries that he went. But he, from doing that, was able to find many, many Jewish children and bring them back to the Jewish people. A real hero, an incredible person. Actually, his son was one of my rabbis in Ater Yisrael Yeshiva in Beit Vegan in Yerushalayim, and somebody who just is inspiring to see, a person who felt the pain, as we just mentioned earlier, that it's incumbent upon all of us to feel the pain of our fellow Jews. We're one big family. And what he did to help the Jewish people, save the Jewish people, should inspire us all to do all we can in every way we can on behalf of the Jewish people. Okay, so let's move on. Let's move on to Wednesday was the 10th of the month of Shvat, this past Wednesday, 10th of Shvat. And on Wednesday, the 10th of Shvat is the anniversary of Daniel Pearl's killing. Daniel Pearl was abducted in Karachi, Pakistan. At the time, Pearl was the South Asia bureau chief of the Wall Street Journal based in Mumbai, India. Having both American and Israeli citizenship, Pearl was on his way to conduct an interview when he was abducted. A group called the National Movement of Restoration of Pakistani Sovereignty took responsibility and sent a range of demands to the U.S. 9 days later, he was brutally murdered by his captors. Wednesday, the 10th of Shvat, was the anniversary of his abduction, and he was murdered 9 days later. 3 weeks later, the final 3.5 minutes of Daniel Pearl's life were released in a video called The Slaughter of the Spy Journalist, the Jew Daniel Pearl. In the video, Pearl read a statement that had been written by the murderers. He stated, "My name is Daniel Pearl. I'm a Jewish American from Encino, California, USA. I come from, on my father's side, the family is Zionist." I'm just quoting exactly what he said. "My father's Jewish. My mother's Jewish. I'm Jewish. My family follows Judaism. We made numerous family visits to Israel. I am a Jew." And he was murdered after those words. Pearl's murderers were brought to justice. 3.5 months after his murder, his remains were found in a shallow grave. Pakistani philanthropist Abdul Sattar Edhi paid to have the remains collected and interred in the Mount Sinai Memorial Park in Los Angeles. So that was on Wednesday, the 10th of Shvat. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Thursdays and Fridays mean fresh magic at the family bakehouse. Golden challahs, babkas, biscuits, and cakes baked in small batches with no shortcuts. Perfect for Shabbos or the weekend. Find the family bakehouse at Genesis, Euro, and selected distribution centers. So yesterday was the 11th of Shvat. And 11th of Shvat is the Yahrzeit of the great Rabbi Noach Weinberg. In 2009, Rabbi Weinberg passed away. Rabbi Weinberg, as he was affectionately known as Rabbi Noach, was born on the Lower East Side of New York. He was a descendant of the Rebbe of Slonim, the Slonim Hasidic dynasty. After studying at Yeshivas Chaim Berlin in New York, Yeshivas Nei Yisrael in Baltimore, John Hopkins University, and La Jolla University, Rabbi Noach became a salesman for his brother's business. In his travels around America, he encountered many Jews in small communities who were very distant from their Jewish heritage. The assimilation bothered him tremendously and motivated him to leave his job, move to Israel, and enter the field of Jewish outreach. In 1966, Rabbi Noach attempted to open a school to train rabbis to inspire the unaffiliated Jews of the world. He was not successful. He then tried to open a school in Bnei Brak for young men who had not previously been exposed to Torah learning or observant Jewish life. Again, the institution failed. Third time lucky, in 1970, he launched Shema Yisrael, which eventually became Osameach Yeshiva, and he did so with three other giants of Jewish outreach, Rabbi Nota Shula, Rabbi Mendel Weinbach, and Rabbi Yaakov Rosenberg. All of them have passed away, but they all were great legends within the Jewish world and were the first ones to really focus on this area of Jewish outreach, of unaffiliated Jews, of creating Balei Tshuva, of educating Jews about the depth and richness and beauty of our holy tradition. After 4 years, Rav Noach split away due to philosophical differences. So I'm also a student of Osameach Yeshiva, as I'm sure many of our listeners are. Many are members of the Osamach community here in Johannesburg. And Osamach is not just one community, but there are many other communities that are branches of Osamach. So through the pioneering work of these great people, Rav Noach and the other three great Rabbonim, so their ideas and their efforts spread across the Jewish world and had a tremendous impact on all of Klal Yisrael, not only in Eretz Yisrael, but throughout the diaspora as well. So what were the philosophical differences that led Rav Noach to break away? So the other three great Rosh Yeshivas, Rav Weinbach, Rav Shulam, Rav Rosenberg, felt that they need to build a yeshiva in which the individuals in the yeshiva need to become Talmidei Chachamim, or relative Talmidei Chachamim. In other words, what Rav Weinbach used to call a Baal Sefer, somebody who can learn, that their Jewish education is on a level high enough that whatever Sefer you give them, they'll be able to learn that Sefer, and then they are solid enough, that individual and that family is rooted deeply enough in the soil that they could teach other Jews and withstand the winds of secularism and of modernism in liberalism in the world. And then only then could they really make an impact and help us. Rav Noach felt that we're in such a dire situation, that we're in a state of emergency. We don't have the luxury to build individuals to be Talmidei Chachamim. It takes too long. We must give them a basic Jewish education for a year or two and then send them out in different parts of the Jewish world to reach out and to try and educate their fellow Jews. And because of that philosophical difference, Rosomach maintained its view that it needs to hold on to the Talmidim, to the students, for a number of years, which is still Rosomach's view today. And Rav Noach then started Esh HaTorah, which would teach the basics and then send out fairly quickly Jews to inspire others around the world. In 1974, Esh HaTorah started with 5 students in an apartment in the Old City in Jerusalem. Today, there are 25 branches on 5 continents. Rav Noach also founded the Discovery Seminar, which has been attended by over 100,000 people, the Hasbara Fellowships Program, which teach Israel advocacy, and Esh.com, the most visited Jewish educational resource online. All great achievements of the one and only Rav Noach Weinberg. So that was yesterday, the 11th of Shvat. Today is the 12th of Shvat. Today, Friday, the 12th of Shvat. On this day in 1941, Cafe Alcazar in Amsterdam was destroyed by the Nazis. Cafe Alcazar was frequented by many Jews, as was the case on the day it was destroyed. The purpose of the destruction was to provoke a fight within the local Jews. The incident sparked several pogroms against the Jews, but the Jews fought back. The Jews had much support from their non-Jewish neighbors. After the pogrom, the incident ensued in Amsterdam. I lost my mind. After the pogroms, a strike ensued in Amsterdam. Nearly 300,000 joined the strike, and it brought the bustling city of Amsterdam to a halt. The strike spread to other parts of Holland, but it only lasted 3 days as it was vehemently put down by the Nazi police. Yet, it is still significant because it represents the first and only direct action against the treatment of the Jews in Nazi Europe. So we see the Dutch Jews were supportive of their countrymen, the Dutch population was supportive of their Jewish countrymen and actually tried to stand up to the Nazis until they were brutally repressed and cut down. This is the same day. Today also is the anniversary of 2 years later, 1943, of the first armed resistance in the Warsaw Ghetto. So today, 85 years ago, was the destruction of Cafe Alcazar and the resulting strike in Amsterdam. And today, 83 years ago, was the beginning of the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. The Germans entered the ghetto by surprise. The Jews thought total deportation was imminent. The Jewish fighting organization dispersed amongst the crowd and at a coordinated time began attacking Germans. While all the Jewish fighters would be shot except for one, the Nazis also suffered casualties and injuries. This was the first time that the Germans had endured physical harm in the ghetto. So today marks Jewish resistance and Jewish opposition to the Nazis. Although they were all brutally cut down, it still shows the fighting Jewish spirit of the Jewish people. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
So tomorrow is the 13th of Shvat. Today is the 12th of Shvat. Tomorrow is the 13th of Shvat. 13th of Shvat is the anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz in 1945 by the Red Army. Already in November 1944, oh, by the way, the secular date was the 27th of Jan, and that's why Holocaust Memorial Day around the world was on Tuesday, which was the 27th of Jan. But the Hebrew date is actually tomorrow, the 13th of Shvat. Now, within the Jewish people, there's a Holocaust Memorial, Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Memorial Day in Israel. But the main day that we commemorate all suffering and hardship and loss within the Jewish world is Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is our national day of mourning, where we remember the calamities and the turbulent history of the Jewish people. But nonetheless, it is important to remember the 13th of Shvat tomorrow, the day when Auschwitz was liberated in 1944. Already in November 44, the Russian army was advancing through Poland. The Germans began transferring prisoners further into the Reich by way of the infamous death marches. Roughly 60,000 prisoners were on the march, with an estimated quarter perishing along the way. The Nazis then began systematically dismantling and destroying any evidence of the death camp. When the Russians arrived at 3:30 p.m., they found around 7,500 prisoners, inmates still there, and 600 corpses. The event was not widely publicized, as the Russians sought to play down Jewish suffering under the Nazis. Unlike those prisoners liberated by the Americans and British, Auschwitz prisoners were on their own after the liberation, left to try and find their way home. They were greeted with hostility everywhere they went. So although there were 7,500 that remained, 1 million people were murdered in Auschwitz. I'm sure many of our listeners have been to Auschwitz. I have been there. It is worthwhile making the trip to anti-Semitic Poland and to see Auschwitz. It is a very moving experience to go to Birkenau, Auschwitz II, which was the main death camp, to see the Nazis blew up the gas chambers and the crematorium. But there is one in Auschwitz, one that still remains, a small gas chamber and a crematorium, so you see that. But you to stand at that site where millions of Jews were killed is a very moving, a very powerful experience. Rachaim Kanevsky says, any place where Jews were killed, Al Kiddush Hashem, is a holy place, and you feel that energy and that power. It's important for us to remember what happened and not to be naive and think that it can't happen again. And I think that's worth mentioning, because I've been very distressed by many of the world news outlets in their coverage of National Holocaust Day, of Holocaust Remembrance Day. For example, you may have heard, but the BBC mentioned the atrocities of World War II, but did not mention Jews. Holocaust Memorial Day, when 6 million people were killed. People. They don't mention the Jews. Now, of course, there were others that were killed by the Nazis. There were the Gypsies. There were homosexuals. There were the political opposition. Many thousands and hundreds of thousands of other people were killed. But the death machine of the Final Solution and of the extermination camps was for the Jews. The Nazis set it up and designed this industrial death factory for the Jews. It was the Final Solution. It was to wipe out the Jewish people. It was ethnic cleansing. Yet the much of the world, certainly from liberal parts or hard left parts of the world, they want to remove Jews from the Holocaust. It's an unbelievable thing that we're seeing in our time. And it's a deliberate campaign to undermine the Jewish people and to undermine Israel. And so what they've done is they want to turn the Holocaust against the Jewish people. So they say the Holocaust was a genocide against people, and therefore anybody can do it. And Israel's not free from being accused of committing genocide themselves against the Palestinian people, because they also indiscriminately are murdering the Palestinian people. Now, of course, we know that that is a complete lie. that is false. Israel does not and never has had a plan to exterminate the people, ethnic cleansing. That's not at all what, if Israel wanted to do that, they could have done that in one day. They could have, the powerful air force could have bombed Gaza and they would have wiped out the Palestinians. Israel has no intention of doing that. Israel did not indiscriminately murder civilians. Hamas very slyly and very cleverly make their headquarters in hospitals and in schools, in kindergartens. They hide behind civilians in order to increase the numbers of civilian casualties and present to the world that Israel is carrying out a genocide, which is really, really not true. It's absolutely false. And so they want to make a moral equivalent and turn Israel into the Nazis, which is a deliberate attempt to undermine the Jewish people. And so we should be aware of that. We should remember the Holocaust Memorial Day and the terrible atrocities in the Holocaust. We should be aware of the tremendous anti-Semitism that we see in the world from the left, from the Islamic world. And we should, as Jews, be proud and lift our heads and fight the falsehoods that are being peddled in the media and stand up for our people and realize that a Holocaust is something that unfortunately could happen again. Thank you so much for listening. Wishing everybody a wonderful Shabbos.